Right, welcome to the GMBN podcast, and today we have got Loic Bruni from the south of France, 26 years old, rides for Specialized Gravity. He is a four times world downhill champion, former world junior champion, and of course the reigning World Cup downhill champion. Basically, he's a man with a ton of gold. I'm Stephen Jones, moonlighting from EMBN, but former downhill racer and downhill journalist. So today I'm here for GMBN. Today we're going to be talking with Loic about many things, the current situation obviously, racing, France, changes to downhill, and also the technical side to the sport. Loic, thanks for joining us from the south of France, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, man, you're welcome. I'm happy to join. It's been a long time I didn't speak with you, so I'm happy.
So what is the situation? What is your, where are you living, and what's going on in your life at the minute?
So right now I'm in France at the parents' house. I moved out a few years ago, but I had to come back because the setup is really good here. I have a home gym and I have family, so I decided to come back to France for the confinement. And the situation is bad. It sucks a lot because everything is getting stricter and stricter every day, kind of. So we cannot go out so much anymore, not even for like for a super small ride, it's forbidden. So every time you're thinking about going in the forest, even though no one will see you, it's kind of not the smartest solution. So really frustrating, and a lot of people are trying to respect the rules, but it's getting heavy on everyone's mind, you know. So I hope it won't last too much.
Yeah, it must be crazy living in such a beautiful place as the south of France and seeing all the beaches closed, I guess.
It's unreal because the weather is like pretty much summertime. It's 20, 25 degrees. The sun's shining. The water is flat. It looks so nice for a swim. Everything just asks you to go out and then you can. So it sucks.
Yeah. Hey, so right now lockdown came so close to the season opener. What were your emotions on the news that you weren't going to go racing?
Well, I don't know about you, but I was kind of expecting a decision about racing in Luzard or not, and well, it came really late. So I kept believing in the fact that we will race, and I just kept training hard until the week before, and they announced it really last minute. So it was a big disappointment, even though when you're training hard and stuff and you have this anxiety of racing for the first time again, it was kind of a little bit a relief because you're like, oh, you get like a little bit more weeks to train and prepare. But then suddenly everything started to get cancelled and postponed, and everything just started to fall apart. So big frustrations came in. We realized we trained, all of us, and it's not even me, I think. It's the teams preparing the logistics, the riders training hard. Everyone just started to realize that we were wasted. So everything for not much, because we will not be racing until, for now, until August, I think.
Yeah. So You mentioned anxiety there. I guess there's a huge emotional build-up and a target to get to. And for it to be not there must be quite difficult to deal with, right?
Yeah, it's a weird feeling because you do everything. You live around this goal you have and you prepare for it. And then you think only about this because it's coming closer and closer, and your team speaking about it. Like your life is all about it. And then you're scared. You're not scared of failing, but you have a lot of expectations that you put on yourself. And then last year, obviously, was super well result-wise. So I had a lot of things that I didn't want to miss, you know, and I didn't want to go to Luzard unprepared and unready to battle again with the best. And yeah, that's related to anxiety because you just ask yourself so many questions, and then you start to doubt about your abilities and stuff, and it's good. It's good for you. It makes you a better man every day, I think.
Wow. Hey, so listen, have you been able to keep on training?
Well, that's the weird point, honestly, because you know you have to train a little bit to maintain the fitness, but because we don't have a goal and a date to be ready or picking for, it's quite impossible to stay motivated and to train hard and suffer. So I have been maintaining the fitness, but I cannot say I've been training hard on the training.
I guess it's difficult because you're working to an unknown schedule, right?
Yeah. Like you don't know when's the next time you'll be able to test things and stuff. So you trying to get to stay ready, but you don't know what's next. So it's weird.
Yeah. Can you roughly sort of outline some of the positives and the negatives of the lockdown?
Positives, I'm starting to struggle finding them because it's been a while now, but some positive things are the fact that you can spend a little bit more time with your family, and especially me, moving around every year, all the year, you just have a little bit more quality time, I would say. And you can do things like social media that normally I don't really have time or don't really have the motivation to do. Now it's pretty much the only thing that keeps me linked to my athlete life. And I'm doing some gardening, some little things in the house that I would never do, and I'm learning to speak Danish. So that's some things I would never have time to do. And the negatives are way more, the list is way longer, honestly, because you have all the frustrations to not be racing, to have been training for not much, and the fear of the economic fear of not having that much money or not even money this year because it's not even sure we're going to race. And the brand asking you a lot of things because they want also presence on the social media. And so it's a lot of work that I don't really want to do, but I have to kind of.
Yeah.
So and then, yeah, the anger of people who just can't do anything. So it's hard for everyone, I think.
You mentioned learning Danish. Can you give us a bit of a background to why you learn Danish?
Okay, I thought you were gonna ask me to speak Danish. I was sure. So no. So yeah, I'm trying to speak Danish to speak a little bit better with the family of my girlfriend Malena, who's Danish and who's living in Denmark at the moment and stuff. And because they speak really good English over there, but I still want to speak. Like if we have kids one day, which is a little bit planned, it's far. Like, I don't know if we will. But if we have kids, I want to speak the same language as them, and I want to speak Danish, English, and French. And Malena is learning French, so I have to.
Wow, nice. Okay, so let's chat racing now. I'm going to go into a quick fire section, Loic, if that's okay. Of which would you rather? Which would you prefer of the list? Now, you must only have one answer to the options, okay? So I'm going to start off with wine or beer?
Wine.
Okay. Ride alone or with mates?
With mates. Depends. The mates.
Girlfriend or marriage?
Marriage.
Well, I like your style. And now, what about having a beer with Amaury Piron or with Danny Hart?
Amaury Piron.
What, after Danny did that for you in the last?
Yeah. I know. I really like Danny. And even though before that, I liked Danny, but I feel like Danny doesn't really like to go out with his competitors, and I know Amaury does, so...
Okay, right. Hey, so listen, you know what's coming next, right? You know what's going to be the next comparison.
No.
Okay, so 27.5 or 29?
27.5, man, for life.
Well, even though that 29-inch wheel keeps you safe up front on your bike.
Yeah, but then I cannot answer in the middle, so I say 27.
Okay, e-bike or chairlift?
Well, I'd say chairlift. Even though e-bikes are the
fucking best. I'm going to go. Sorry, I'm going to end the call here.
Come on.
I'm always joking. Yeah, go chairlift.
Because?
What? Chairlift because you can just sit and chill, enjoy the view, and it's so nice. E-bike, you still have to pedal a little bit, so it's hard.
Okay. Aluminium or carbon?
Aluminium.
Yeah. World and the last one, World Cup or World Championships?
World Championships, of course.
Okay, right. Well, let's actually move on now then to World Cup Downhill. Now, this would have been your eighth senior season. Hell of a season last year, Loic. Probably one of the most exciting race seasons ever, with so many tight races, right?
Yeah. You want me to rebound on that? Yeah, of course. It was the craziest season because, well, I haven't been doing a full season for a few years before last year, and then I started off with a win in Maribor, so I was super happy, and the times were already super tight, so it promised quite a tight racing for the whole year, and every round we had, like, the top five was so tight, and it was actually weird because the top five for the first time in a few years was pretty much the same every time. So it was actually nice to have this overall battle never over because we were all staying in touch with each other. And yeah, mentally it was super hard because you knew you couldn't do any mistakes or any like lack of performance because the other ones were so consistent. So it was really cool to be able to fight, to battle with them. And the fans, I think they loved it. So perfect. I like it.
Yeah, I watched your crash in Fort William yesterday. Oh, that was a big one, right?
Yeah, that one was it was a big mistake from me because I just went a little bit offline before that takeoff, and honestly, it was the scariest moment, one of the scariest moments of my life because you're going so fast, and I was off the bike and in the air, so I knew I was going to eat pretty hard. And I did, and honestly, it could have cost me the season. So lucky. Mm.
Yeah, but you came back. You got yourself together. I mean, how on earth you walked away from it? And then obviously the whole season came down to the wire. It was crazy how the numbers worked out, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was unbelievable, even for us, because we were riding the best we could and we were winning races and staying in the top three the whole time, and we couldn't make a gap on Amory or even Troy, so it was really hard to deal with, and the pressure was non-stop. And after Lenzerheide, where I kind of missed my weekend, I kind of expected way more from me. I was sad to say that it was gonna all end up in snowshoe, and it did until the last man, the last second. So it was crazy, man.
Now, both you and Amory have put France men's downhill back on the map, but it took 18 or 19 years for France to get back there since Nico Voulez won the series in 2000. Now, talking about France as a racing nation, it was very thin on men's downhill winners for many, many years. Why do you think that was?
Well, first of all, I think even though we had a big gap between the generations until we are all back on top, I would say, I feel like there was no nations dominating for the last 10 years. There was one American, there was one Australian maybe, one or two UK, one French, or, you know, it was never like a full generation of a country killing it. So it's not a thing. It was not a thing anymore, a country that had more strength or abilities than others. And I don't know why. I feel like the generations of Nico, Fabien, all these big champions we had, even like the more old school ones like François Gachet and all these guys, they were super fast, but it was the early stages of the sport. And I think they all can thank Nico, because Nico was the extra, like the alien, you know, it was the only one doing some stuff, and inspired a lot of people in France in his marks, you know, behind him. So that pulled some guys like Fabien and stuff. And when Nico stopped, then the Frenchies were kind of lost, I think. So having the reputation of not being the coolest on the circuit, plus Nico was gone, so all the Frenchies, I think they were back from like starting from scratch, I think, and that's when Thirion, like these kind of guys, appeared, and then I came just behind, and Loris came, Amory, and then we had suddenly a really strong generation, and we all stayed really fair and really friends in the process of the competitiveness. I don't know if I can say that.
Wow, yeah.
And then we rised up together, you know, and then I think that's why.
Yeah, wow, that's really interesting. I mean, I was going to say, obviously France is exceptionally strong at enduro racing. In the first EWS season in 2013, I think half the top 20 were French. But I was going to ask you, do you think it's because France loves enduro so much?
Yeah, for sure. France and French people have always been riding the Megavalanche. You know, like the legacy of the enduro is big in France because we had already a big scene before it started to be an international thing. And then Nico, Fabien, all these guys were attracted by this discipline. Then they went and they raced the first EWS, and then they won everything pretty much. Clements, you know, all these people who already were dominating the downhill marathon, the Megavalanche, Maxi Avalanche and stuff. So I feel like the French were already they had the step ahead, you know, like they were a little bit in front. And then 3-4 years later, of course, like the other ones, the other nationalities, they started to train harder and to prepare harder and stuff. So it kind of evened out. And now it's really, even though French people are still really strong, it's more shared between countries.
Now, talking about you and your riding, a lot of people comment that you look so strong on the bike, so stable on the bike. How does it actually feel? Are you actually being beaten at those speeds, or are you simply just hitting the high spots?
Well, yeah, I've also noticed that my style has been evolving towards this strong and smooth controlling style, I would say. And well, for me, when I ride, I just really try to stay smooth. So that's I know my bike is working as well as at its best, pretty much. But I still need to absorb a lot of things with my legs and stuff. And I don't know. When I'm riding, I just know the bike will back up my mistakes and stuff. So I'm able to rely a lot on the bike. So I let the bike work more than I do, I think. And that saves me a lot of energy, and that also allows me to just think about going fast and not think about breathing or recovering and stuff. So it's a weird style, but I didn't learn it. It just came naturally. So it's hard to explain why I did that, but it's true. It's interesting. I'm one of the most static rider. I think when I ride, my body doesn't move so much, and I think it's what makes me so, not different, but it's my style, you know. Now it's my style, I think.
Yeah. Do you think that you gain confidence then from some very accurate data acquisition of your bike? So you've got complete confidence
for sure. Data acquisition is like the voice in your head that's helping you understanding and that sometimes you do a run and then you're trying to explain what happens because there is a lot of things to say. But it's hard to really find the little thing that you wanted to improve and stuff. So it's like instead of having one rider on the bike when you test or you ride at the races, you have two riders, and the second rider, which is the data, is actually really good at knowing what's wrong. So it's just way easier for me and for my mechanic to point out the problems and to see where we can improve the range of the bike or whatever. And actually, when I know that the bike has been analyzed and prepared, it's way easier for me to push and to just focus on going fast and finding the lines.
Yeah. Okay. Loic, I asked you earlier to maybe get a couple of objects that mean a lot to you. Did you get those objects?
I didn't, but I have some stuff here, so don't move. Wait, let's
okay, describe the first object that you've got there and why it means a lot to you.
Without showing you or with showing you?
Yeah, just describe it.
Okay, so here we have one of my first object. It's the rainbow jersey, like the official one from the podium, so not the riding one. And I think that one is from Lenzerheide 2018. So So yeah. Just the GLZ itself is just something massive for a mountain biker. You know, it's just a one-shot race, and it's kind of easier, I would say, to get because it's not on the whole season like the World Cup overall, but it's still so hard to get and so valuable and precious that I really like it. It's my one of my biggest pride. So, and this one especially because Lenzerheide was after a crazy season where I got injured in the first at the first race, and then I came back, won Mont Saint-Anne and won the world. So it was crazy this year. And then the second one is my first.
Yeah, we'll describe the second one later. I'm going back to that jersey now. Obviously, you've been world champion in 2015, 2017, 18, and 19. Now, when you look at the world championships, only one country dominates that event, and it's France. France has got 14 wins, and Great Britain. Well, France has got four.
Nico has seven elites. Fabian has two elites. Do you count the juniors or not?
No, just the seniors. But anyway, my question is, again, it comes back to France being so strong. Why is France so strong at the World Championships?
Well, I think it also comes to Nico and to the legacy we have from that, because Nico was the one always excelling, even at the World Cups, but the World Champs, I think he won seven in a row or something like this. So it's something that we, and it was not a French thing to be winning at the World Championships, but it kind of became like a big pride in France to have the rainbow jersey. And Fabien won two times in a row in 05 and 04. So yeah. It was, and he really wore the jersey with a lot of class, I think. And that that was also a big moment where we realized that the jersey was massive, and the signification of wearing it is also pretty much the biggest thing in mountain bike. So I think French people just really like it, and when the French guy is wearing it, it's really cool. So we all spend a lot of time preparing for this race, and I think now we have maybe the last few years, Loris especially didn't really care about World Champs because he was a little bit more focused on the World Cups, and he knew it was hard to win a World Cup, so he didn't think about winning the World Champs, you know. And now yeah. Him and Amaury, seeing that it's been on my shoulders for a few years, they really start to see the value of it and really crave for it, I think. So, and they both can win it, so it's really inside also the country race that we want. We all want it, and we all have a shot at it. So it's really, really cool.
Yeah. So I want to talk. You mentioned their legacy. Now I want to try and maybe link legacy to clothing. So you're 26 years old, right? You are 26, aren't you? Not 27.
Not yet. I'm going to be 26 in May, but yeah.
Okay, so 26 years old with five World Cup wins, and obviously you're joining the great French racers, Franck Roman, Michael Pascal, Cedric Gracia, François Gachet, Fabien Barel and Nico Vulliez. Now, there has been a lot of changes in the time, not just to downhill, but maybe to you as well. And in this respect, I'm talking about clothing. Now, obviously, when you go back to Loic Bruni of 2012, 2013, big baggy clothes, but it's a very very different picture today. You know, the super tight clothes must be important, right?
Yeah. Well, back in 2011 and 12, first of all, the style of the whole circuit pretty much was not so fit. Like everyone had motor gears pretty much and big shorts, and no one cared so much. And especially us, because we didn't have the best clothing suppliers, I would say. It was, when I look back, I'm like, oh, I'm a little bit ashamed of looking like this, but it's okay. It's you have to go through these steps, and then we started to do data with my mechanic to really start training hard, and then we realized that clothing was also a point where you could improve your like average, I would say, on the run. So we kind of thought about it when we were on Lapierre. The last year we were on Lapierre with Watt Industries because they had some motocross fabrics that we really liked, and we asked them to make a little bit tighter, tighter pants. And then no one was really shocked. Some people were like, oh yeah, your pants are super thin, it's weird. Like, more about the thin pants than really slim fit, you know. So we took it to the next step the year after, and when we were on the first year on Specialized, because on the first visit we made in Morgan Hill at the headquarters, we actually used the wind tunnel to test the clothing. So we also test the helmets with the GoPros, not the GoPros and stuff, and clothing was quite impressive, you know. It's always theoretical, so it's never actually the same in real life. But we took the next step with One Industries again, with tighter clothes, and every time I was racing, I would pull my pants up as much as I could. Like, for example, in Lourdes, in Cairns, after I got injured, it's different. But people were like, "What the f***? Why are you pulling up your pants?" And they were tight on my calves, but on my quads, they were pretty much normal. But people were not so happy, and they were a little bit judgy about this. And I was like, "Yeah, I like it." And I actually liked it style-wise, and it was smarter for aero. So I was like, whatever, I like it. Then I did it. People were not so stoked about me doing it, but they couldn't say anything because it was not really forbidden, I think, I would say. And then I kept doing it for the whole year. And then when we switched to Fox, it was even tighter, and we started to pull. I kept pulling it. Everyone started to do the same. So I was like, okay, see, now people were talking shit about me. Now they all pull their pants and and take the, you know, and make it slim. And now I still have like one of the tightest kits in the circuit, but some brands are way tighter than me. So I'm like, okay. And for sure, it's a big point. Aero has always been a thing in downhill, and the guy who will tell you it's not true or it's bullshit is dumb, because it's a fact, you know. It's not even a way to think, it's true. And yeah, I feel like now some brands and some teams are pushing it a little bit too much, and it's actually back to the really close to the skin suit, and it's actually forbidden. So be like, we have to be careful, and especially like Amaury, I would say. but it's so far it's no one got problems, so it's accepted, and no one has been reclamating or whatever at the UCI, so they still do it. But for sure, the kit of Amaury or the kit of, I don't know who, for example, not Greg Mina anymore, but okay, like I don't know, but someone who has a little bit old school things, I would say. Like Troidy is kind of old school, even though it's so sick. Like, yeah, even there is a little difference, I'm sure, in theoretical values in the run.
Hey, so you mentioned Specialized. Now, this is your fifth season on Specialized, I believe. And you know, you're their most successful downhill racer ever. Now, in 2017, I remember bumping into you in the hills above Los Angeles. I don't know if you remember that moment. You were doing some secret testing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. True.
Now, that was a time when 29-inch wheels was new. And only a few weeks later, fast forward to Lourdes, the first World Cup of the year. And obviously the Santa Cruz Syndicate turned up with the 29-inch wheel bikes. Virgier qualifies first, and you come second by less than a second. That's where the 29 versus 27.5 battle begins in reality, right? I want to cast your mind back. And what were your feelings looking back to that time?
Yeah, you're totally right. You told the description perfectly. We met in Crestline, I think, and I, at the time, I did not even think about 29ers. Specialized and Benedict, Brad mentioned it in the past. Like, I was like, yeah, I was just not keen because I've tried it before and I was not feeling natural or myself on the big wheel. So I was like, it's not even the thing. And in downhill, we're moto, you know, we're not cross country, so we're never going to put these wheels on. And then Sandy Cates, because I think they needed solutions to make the old man fast. they came up with 29er wheels in Lourdes, and Loris is one of my best friends, you know, his close friend, and never said a word about it. So they all kept it super super secret, and really to get the surprise effect in Lourdes, and they did. And I think actually Luca was in the top five also in the qualifying. Greg. So it was pretty convincing. Some people were like, okay. And when I saw them ride, I was like, there's something happening with these wheels, because I saw all the other riders, they were on 27, and it was rough and it was hard and the grip was not so good. And they were riding way more smooth and easy. So I was like, there's something there. So we tried. We had a bike ready because their specialized was pushing about it, and I was just refusing. So we tried it too. And then, and then when I was riding, I was also not convinced. I was like, this will never be a thing. And then I was wrong. Yeah, I was wrong. I still maintain my position about the fun and the sensations and stuff, but it's a thing, and it's easy. It's easier. So.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the current situation, many riders now use 29-inch wheels. Even Sam Hill uses 29-inch wheels.
I know. That was the biggest disappointment in my life.
My question to you is, how did you actually make the decision on your current combination of 27.5, 29 up front?
Well, when that 29er thing became a trend, I was like, okay, for sure there is a margin here, because I saw so many people, guys like Loris and I don't know, some good riders didn't really improve that much because they were already fast, but some other people were just way faster and way better because the bike was allowing them to be doing new things. And I was a bit frustrated that I couldn't adapt my style to these big wheels. Then my mechanic and the team, we were like always convinced about this, a bigger wheel in front. So we were like, fuck, we should. But it was forbidden. You know, UCI had a rule, a pretty old rule about having the same size on each wheel on the same bike. So we were blocked. So we were like, okay, it's still cool, but it will never happen. Then the team started to push, the team manager started to push about changing that rule to the UCI. And then they did in the winter of 2018. So preparing the season to 19, we directly switched to 29, 27, and the gain was real, and we really felt that was what my style was going to be faster on, you know?
Yeah. Do you think, now obviously there's different riders use different wheel sizes. I've actually seen in the off-season there are some people maybe trying to copy the style that you've got. Now, my question is, do you think that wheel size is a personal thing, or is it a personal thing based on feeling, or is it a science based on fact?
First, it's a fact, because a bigger wheel will have a bigger, better grip and will roll over holes and things better. So that's a fact. But it's also a feeling problem, because some people are not able to ride with this big wheel in the back, especially where you cannot really move backwards so much. So this is my case. I have my ass on the wheel pretty much all the time. So if I had to ride with both 29er wheels, it would be a big change on my style. And when I push for a race run, it's really a problem. When I'm riding for fun or testing, it's okay. I've always been noticing pretty much no difference. But when I'm pushing, everywhere I can feel the wheel in my ass. So it's for sure science that can be applied easily or not. And for me, it's not the case. But I want to know who's copying my style, man.
Okay, so Loic, can we take at this point? I want to apologize to the GMBN audience. I'd like to maybe ask Loic a few questions about e-bikes, if you don't mind, just for a minute or so.
No problem.
It's okay.
Yeah, I got my e-bikes last winter and I love it. So,
Okay. So Loic, I want to quickly chat about e-bikes. Have you been using, we saw your Levo at Drachten Air Festival. Is that the bike you use? Do you actually use your Levo very much?
Yeah. That's the bike. That was my first e-bike I got. So it's only a few months old, and I use it quite a lot because when I want to ride with Malena and I have an easy day, I have to ride with this because she's too fast. And I love it because I can just go way further, and it's just a different style of riding. And for me, it's everything that I don't like is gone with the e-bike, so I'm happy.
Okay. Do you have a Levo SL as well?
No, I don't have this one. I should have.
I think maybe Specialized need to get that shipped down to you, don't they?
Man, I want to. It's hard because the problem with these bikes, they are so successful that for the marketing, sports marketing, we don't have that many. So there's like quite a wait.
Yeah. Do you have friends with e-bikes down there in South France?
Yeah. So my dad has one. Loris has one now with the Santa Cruz. And I have some friends who have, like most of my friends, they stop racing and stuff and they work, so they all bought e-bikes for sure. So it's better.
Yeah.
I guess you live in the perfect place, right, to ride them.
Man, here it's super, like the uphills are pretty tough, technical and steep. So with a normal bike, it's quite hard and not so enjoyable. And with this bike, you can just have so much fun going up. And when you go down, it's also super rough. And the weight and the good suspensions on the bike just make it so much more fun. So I'm happy.
It seems quite a lot of downhill racers seem, especially French downhill racers, seem to be ahead of the curve with the e-bikes, right? I mean, I'm looking at, you know, Nico and Fabian and obviously Cedric. Have you seen Cedric and his new Forestal bike?
Yeah, I like the things that they all do because they take the new side of the sport and they still adapt it to their old school style and to their knowledge, and they make it so good. So I like what Cedric does.
Yeah. Okay, let's get back to downhill racing and Loic Bruni. I want to quickly chat about some tech stuff. Start off with Olins. Obviously a long relationship with Olins. It's quite funny because when I went to visit Olins probably in 2015, they said that they would never be part of a downhill team, but here they are. They're now World Cup and World Downhill champions. It's you must be happy with them.
Yeah, for sure. So I don't know what their vision was back in the time you said in 15, but we tried the suspensions in after World Champs in 2016, and I think they had a really good relationship with Specialized. So they really kind of saw the opportunity of working with the biggest brand, and you know, like the EOM, EOM markets and stuff. And then I think they have the competitions in their blood, so they were like, okay, we want a team. And then we tried their things, and the fork was really early stage at the time. The shock was already pretty developed, so there was a lot of work to do on the fork and not much to do on the shock, and we really liked the shock. So going from RockShox to Olins, we could really feel the difference in the mindset, I would say, of the suspension. When I say mindset, I mean the way the suspension will evolve through compression. And that's why we made so much progress with Olins, because we can actually have suspension that when we close the high speed or whatever, it keeps working. And that was the main problem with RockShox. It was when you close the compression, it stops working. So we were super happy. Then we signed. We said, okay, we're keen. We want to jump on board. The story can be nice if we start together and we take things a little bit further. It's good. And then the year after, we were world champion. So
you seem to have built around you a really good package. Obviously, you've got the Olin suspension, you've got the data acquisition, you've got Specialized working on different frames. You've obviously got your clothing, you've got the physicality dialed in. There's a lot to think about, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's a lot of things that a rider needs to have dialed, because there is not much margin between all of us. So if my suspensions are working really good, then my data acquisition is on point. My coach is on track. My mental coach is calling me every night. Like, I have everything that I need to succeed. And even though a lot of people are investing in data now, I feel like we still have a length in, ahead of them, because we know really well how to analyze it. So that will stay our strength, I think, in the next few years. And it's important. I'm pretty happy with the people I have around me, and really thankful that they all accepted to work for me, because I'm learning.
And it is important. I was going to say, I mean, if you look back at Leogang and Andorra this year, I mean, the top three places were separated by just like tenths of a second. And I mean, do you lose sleep over races like that? You must do.
Yeah. You do. Especially, it's not because it's tight. It's because it's hard, and it's just so exciting. And when you go to sleep the day before the race, I don't know about the other riders, but I have visions of the track in my head, of or ideas on the bike, or, you know, it's last minute things that your brain is activating to perform the day after. So it's for sure, sleep is always hard the night before. And yeah, it's always so tight that you cannot leave anything for like random. You have to calculate everything. At least I do.
Yeah. Going to finish off with a few details. Now, is it correct you're still using 31.8 instead of 35 millimeter bars? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
What's the reason for that? Is it to get a bit more flex and comfort in the ride, or?
So it's just that the 35 is really stiff, and I feel like I want flexibility everywhere. So that's also why I don't really use carbon, because the way the carbon flex and stress is super violent. And aluminium 31.8 millimeters is always the same, is always a little bit smooth in the feeling in the hands, and will never have like harsh returns or feedback in your hands. So that's why.
So your system seems to revolve around aluminium. You've got aluminium frame, you've got aluminium wheels, aluminium bars. Obviously you've worked on the comfort of your bike in, you know, what can be quite challenging conditions, and, you know, beat your body sometimes, right?
Yeah, for sure. I don't think there is one way to make a good bike. Like, some people, they have aluminium frames and carbon wheels or full carbon. So I don't know, it depends really on the bike and your preferences. But I feel like having aluminium wheels on aluminium frame is the best combo ever, because I can just feel the bike way better, and I can feel the bike helping me in off camber and all these little imperfections on the ground, where a carbon setup will just use suspension and not the flex of the bike, of the material. So I really like that, and I'm not eager to change.
What's just out of interest, are you on a custom bike, or are you on a standard bike? Like, is it S3 or S2, S4? What are you on?
I think now we have S3, because we built the new bike. They made the production frames based on our bike's geometry. So yeah. Finn and I, we have the same one, and we have the adjustable head tube, so we can go, we have 1 centimeter margin down or forward, and just different linkage again.
So you have offsets in the headset and the bottom bracket, correct?
Yeah.
Is that because you want a longer chainstay on the bike, or?
No, it's because, so we have, We just wanted a lot of flexibility with the bike, and we try always different things, and we need to keep the options available, so we can, we have the, what's the name, the what's the name of the BB, the adjustable BB?
I've got no idea. So, an adjustable BB.
So we can adjust the BB heights all the time, you know?
Okay, right. The bottom bracket height. Okay, right.
Yeah, and position, because, and we can adjust the head tube, the offset of the fork. Like, everything is just adjustable, because for us there is not one setup that fits all. You know, we always have to change, and we love to have these options. And I think that's what makes it easier for us, because we are not limited.
A couple of final questions. First one is, what are your thoughts on bike weight? Do you think it can be bikes that are too light or too heavy? I know that Nico Vullius had his own, he was very clear on what his thoughts were on bike weight. What are your thoughts on bike weight?
Are you speaking about downhill bikes?
Downhill bike. You think there's an optimum weight for a downhill bike?
Yeah, for sure. I've seen in the past a lot of really light bikes that I don't think are the best options, simply because a bike still has, and you see it with e-bikes, a bike with a little bit of weight will always sit nicely in turns and just swallow things a little bit nicer. And I think, like, so far with the Specialized, I'm a little bit complaining about the weight because it's a little bit too heavy. But I think a bike between 17 and 18 kilos is the best option.
Okay, and what about rider weight?
That's different. For sure, you don't want to be too light because you will just bounce off everything. And you don't want to be too heavy either because you would just use massive springs and massive cartridge and stuff. So the dumping will be not so easy for the suspensions to hold. But for sure, between 70 and 88 kilos, I think.
Is the optimum.
Yeah, because...
Wow.
Yeah. And the height, I think it's better to be taller now. With a 29er and you're tall, you just have... The track seems smaller than you.
Wow. Do you know what? We could actually talk about rider heights as well for another 20 minutes, but I did promise that we would keep it under an hour. I just want to talk about your second item, Lewick, before we finish, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. So this is my first Red Bull helmet. It's from 2014. So it's the symbol of really hard work and big achievement to be on Red Bull. There's never been a downhill mountain biker in France being Red Bull. Downhill, yeah. So yeah. It was a dream. I was always like, yeah, asking Laurent, my team manager, can you speak with Red Bull, blah, blah, blah. And then my first year elite was really nice. I had good results. And then Red Bull made me do some tests and they were happy. So I finally signed. And when I received this helmet, you have no idea how happy I was. I was like, yeah. So this is a big piece for me. I hope I never lose it. And it reminds me where I came from, kind of, you know?
Yeah, that's cool.
Wow, Lewick, thanks so much. Thank you so much for joining us from the south of France, in very challenging times. That was a very insightful look at the world of a World Cup and world champion, I think. Let us know your thoughts on this, on the podcast with Lewick. And hopefully we will catch up with Lewick in the season ahead.
I hope we will have a season, man. Thank you so much.